Welcome to Game On with Grace, where we're not just talking cricket wins and losses, we're talking off-field antics, guilty pleasures, and the drive that never quits. Hey everyone, I'm Grace Hayden, and today's guests redefined leadership on the world stage at just 22 years old. He became the South African youngest ever captain and went on to become one of the most successful test leaders in the history of the game. With over 50 victories and more than a decade at the helm, a powerhouse opening batsman, a fearless competitor, and now the commissioner of SA20 League, Graham Smith has seen every side of the modern game. We'll talk about what it takes to lead through chaos, the evolution of cricket in the franchise era, and how he's helped shape the game in its next generation and the development of its stars. Game on. Graham, welcome to Game On with Grace. I'm so thrilled to have you here. Now, we do know each other. We're not meeting for the first time. We do know each other. I want to reminisce on the first time that we properly met. Obviously, you saw me as a little young tucker running around, but I want to, you know, reminisce on a time that we were both in London. I was at Royal Ascot all day having multiple champagnes. I'd just been choppered back into London City, and we found ourselves at a bar. I was ordering a drink and I hear some voices yelling, "Gracie," across the room. Do you want to tell the rest of the story?
I think your dad was very happy that we were there to make sure that you were well-behaved and okay. I remember we video called him and he messaged me, said, "Please make sure Gracie behaves." And ultimately we did that. Although I left you at some point, Gracie. I think you went off into the city. But my stamina let me down there. So yeah, I was obviously good. So many memories of playing against your dad when you were a youngster. I mean, he's fortunately a little bit older than me. So I've got a few more years on him, but I'm watching you all grow and now, you know, being, you know, really good friends and seeing how you guys are developing your own lives and careers now.
And talking about that friendship, you know, you rekindled over in London again. What is that with the Hayden family and you? But you were both Hall of Famers this year in 2025. I was so devastated. I couldn't be there to celebrate with my family. Obviously, Dad got inducted at the same time as you, but you all had a sensational time over there together. And what an honor as well for you to, you know, such a significant moment in your career personally. But let's talk about the fun first of you guys rekindling and what a fun time it would have been in London.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think over the years now, certainly on the media side, I've got to spend some quality time with your dad, having a few whiskeys and maybe the odd cigar and catching up and reminiscing. Also, like, I think there's been some tough moments with, important people in his life and our lives that have passed away. So we've had to share some of those. But, you know, London for us was a great time. I think it was an opportunity for us just to celebrate. I think Hall of Fame is an incredible thing to achieve, but what made it even better was that, like, the people that I think we were, you know, kind of on the night being inducted into the Hall of Fame with, like, you know, me and Maddie Hayden, you know, Dan Vittori, Dhoni, and so on, you know, they're, you know, really quality people. So I got to share the moment with your family, with my family. We actually booked a small little Italian restaurant, all family and close friends. We hired it out for the next night, which we really took advantage of. It was lots of really great red and way too much food for me and Haydos. The big boys were feeding at the trough. But it was amazing. And then, you know, commentating together during the World Test Championship final and really just being able to enjoy days in London together.
Yeah, immersing yourselves in what an incredible moment in your careers, even though they finished a while ago, but just really recognizing everything that you've done since then and all the in-between as well. It's just been spectacular to watch. Now, here on Game On with Grace, we like to look at the human behind the hype. Now, obviously, you start as a youngster going into the cricketing grassroots, but where did cricket really start for you? Who was your inspiration? How did the journey begin for you?
Gracie, I think, like, you know, in my youth, growing up in South Africa, obviously like Australia, it's a very like outdoor climate. You know, you're swimming, you're playing in the garden, you know, you're outdoors, and sports and active outdoor life is like a real big part of kind of your youth. You know, for me, you know, cricket started in the back garden with my brother, but I think it was the 92 World Cup. South Africa was just coming out of apartheid. I was 92. I was like 11, maybe turning 12. And South Africa just got readmission back into sport. So for the first time ever, we started seeing South African cricket on a global stage, you know, the first tour to India. And, you know, then 92 World Cup in Oz, was the first time I kind of saw, you know, a South African team playing in a World Cup in colored clothing. And suddenly, you know, for me, it was the first time you thought, wow, you know, you could actually have a career in sport in South Africa. And that was kind of a kickstart of a dream for me. You know, I loved cricket by that age, and, you know, it was starting to show a little bit of talent, and it moved from the back garden to like, you know, but more kind of performance stuff. And yeah, that was for me where it all kickstarted. So never really one hero. It was just that moment back in readmission back into sport that like triggered a lot of sort of mental stuff that said, hey, there's an opportunity here for you to build a career in sport.
Were you a multifaceted youngster? Were you sort of trying and buying every sport before you nailed down cricket as your one sport you wanted to pursue? I know rugby is a huge sport over in South Africa. Were you ever tempted to play a bit of footy?
I started at a fairly sort of small co-ed, school co-ed, meaning girls and boys, and you know, sport was kind of a lower key element. And then as kind of my cricket started to progress, and obviously you're playing soccer, you're playing, you know, all sports as a youngster because you want to be outdoors and doing that. And then kind of got spotted and ended up moving to an all boys school in Johannesburg, South Africa called King Edward's Cares, which is, you know, very sort of strong school as a part of kind of the what is a really good schooling ecosystem in South Africa. And then moving into high school, then it's, you know, cricket and, you know, you went to sport was rugby. I loved rugby, but I think for me, you know, it's a seriously, you know, serious sport in South Africa and you've got to be all in on that and the physical side of rugby. So I ended up playing right through my school career, had like great times, but, you know, honestly, probably wasn't ever going to make it into the professional era. And for me, I started playing professional cricket when I was 17. So once I got there, it was just more about protecting myself against any dramatic injuries. Certainly coming up against the Afrikaans schools where they've been tackling, you know, immense sized people since they were about 9 or 10. You know, that's when you just decide, okay, my future's on the cricket side.
It's time for a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back soon. What was it like breaking into the, you know, country's team so young? You just said 17 when you finally debuted. That's young. Had you even finished school by then? I mean, to be playing for your country at such a young age, what an honor, but also that would come with such high stakes and pressure. And, you know, you'd want to think about longevity in your career as well. Was that ever front of mind too?
Yeah, look, I think everything kind of happened a little bit sort of at a younger age for me. So, I mean, 17 was for my sort of state province that I made my debut. South Africa, actually, I made my debut against your father at 21, which was that great Australian team, you know, here in Cape Town, actually, at Newlands. I played my first test ever was against that great Australian team that your dad was a part of, you know. Walking out to bat at Newlands against McGrath, Lee, Gillespie, Warne, and, you know, all the great names of Australian cricket surround you. It was quite a daunting task. But, you know, I knew at the time that if, like, when I, you know, sort of look back on that, I don't think Test cricket gets tougher than, you know, my first experience. So, you know, it kind of sets a great platform for me. And then, yeah, I guess the next thing for me was that I moved quickly into the captaincy. So I got given the captaincy at 22 years old. So, you know, for me, there was like a lot of stuff happened young for me. Maybe that's why I ended up retiring at 33. But, you know, there was just a lot of stuff that came my way at an early age. And, you know, you have to learn to kind of grow up really quickly.
What was that time like getting the captaincy role at just 22 years old? I mean, that's a year younger than I am, and captaining a country that's so passionate about sport, but also cricket too. That's definitely no pressure at all. Zero.
Gracie, when I look back now, I'm like, got no words to like how I coped. I think at the time, you're so in it, you like, you want to believe that you can handle it. I think, you know, South African cricket had been through quite a difficult transition, you know, after the Hansie Cronier kind of saga. You know, 2003 World Cup, home World Cup, didn't end up qualifying. And I think everyone was kind of looking for a new, fresh approach to kind of move forward with into the future. And for some reason, I was kind of given that mantle. But I think it's nuts. When I think back now, like there was so much in South Africa. I mean, South Africa only came back into sport in 92, 93. There was just so much that was still so raw. There was no like real structure, you know, no selection structure. Like there was no sort of team environment structure that had been built. So, you know, I think the only thing that really kept me alive for the first 3 or 4 years as a captain was that I managed to score runs. So it bought me some time. My first tour to England, I got 200s, and that like kind of got everyone off my back. And I had some great support from some of the senior players. So, you know, like Sean Pollock was incredible I took over from him. He was a great support. And then, you know, the likes of Callises and Bouchers and so on and Teenies that really got behind me and allowed me kind of to grow. I think publicly I struggled, so I became very like insular and almost like determined to show people. So you almost like from a protection mechanism outwards, you become a little bit like arrogant because you're just constantly fighting to survive. But inside the environment, I was a lot more relaxed. And you know, that was because people sort of gave me a chance behind the scenes and supported me. But my first 3 or 4 years publicly, you know, it was just like wherever I went, people were challenging me, taking me on, media, public, you know, opposition. And traveling around, you know, that's already tough. So, you know, you've just basically developed this like outward determination and don't let people in. And then like 4 years later, 3 or 4 years later, I felt a lot more comfortable in the job. And, you know, that started to shift.
When the role came up for grabs, were you sort of, you know, did you expect or did you know that this was going to be a pathway for you or that it was coming up? Or did it come as a shock? Did you want it at first or were you a bit hesitant? Were you eager for the challenge or what was sort of running through your mind? Do you remember?
There's such a muddle of emotions at that time. You know, I think for me, captaincy had always been a part of kind of my youth structure. I'd always been in a leadership role. And I think because I'd always played above me, you know, you kind of get exposed to older people a lot more, you know, see older cricketers that are more mature and so on. So I think you developed slightly differently to maybe another young cricketer that's playing in his age group the whole time. And I was always playing 2 or 3 sort of age groups above at school. And then you go club cricket and you're playing in the first team there with men. And so, like, I think I developed slightly differently because of that exposure. You know, I think captaining South Africa, like if I'd set goals, it was definitely one of my goals that I had dreamt of to captain South Africa one day. But at 22, you know, I remember my dad telling me not to do it. You know, he was like, are you nuts? But then in that moment, you've got all this like emotion, you know, you've always wanted to do it. Is it going to come around again? You believe you can take it on. But it's also naive because you just absolutely have no idea of the sort of the vast nature of the job, from dealing politics, selection, and so on, or everything that comes with the job. It's not just captaining on the field, which, you know, takes time in itself, and then performing at that level as well. But, you know, it's everything that comes around it that I just absolutely didn't understand. And that I think was the hardest part. When I decided to say yes, you know, I remember I went to this breakfast as I was South African captain. And, you know, people were asking questions. And I was so naive that I just answered the questions openly and honestly. And then the next day, you know, I saw billboard headlines of some comments that I'd made at the breakfast. And then I thought, okay, life's going to be slightly different now. I've got to be a bit more careful what comes out of my mouth.
Bit more tight-lipped. Damn it, the media would have been having a field day. They would have been loving the honesty. They'd be thinking, finally, someone's just opening the door that we can just write about anything.
Well, the media loves the honesty, but they teach you very, very quickly. Yeah, the media loves the honesty, but then they teach you very, very quickly that you've got to sharpen up and get a little bit more PC really consider what you say and when you say it.
They can build you up, but then they can slap you right down just as quick.
Absolutely. No, don't worry. I've been over like a 14-year career, and I think your dad would say we all been through the ups and downs of the media.
Okay, we're going to take a minute because it's time for a word from our sponsors. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with Graham very soon. Now, talking about how long of a career and successful career you would have had, you do get taken away a lot in the great game of cricket. Obviously, you go from not just travelling around your country domestically, but then out into the big wide world, going to some pretty epic spots. Can you give me your favourite, or you can give me a couple if you want, of on-tour stories that just stick with you and you'll never forget?
Oh, Gracie, I mean, in the early years when you get to tour, it's actually quite mesmerizing and daunting as well. I mean, growing up in South Africa, you know, you grow up on kind of, you know, pitches that are generally more fast and bouncy. And then you arrive in the subcontinent for the first time in India, and it's like the noise, the atmosphere, the heat, you know, the ball spinning square and these, you know, it's a silly point and a short leg, and you're like, what world have I just arrived in now? You know, and you've got to adapt your game between Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, Pakistan, and India. I mean, and the atmospheres of playing there and experiencing the cultures of in particular, like in India, is just, it's incredible. I mean, at 21, 22, you're going through this stuff and just you're exposed to a whole different world. And then, you know, like on the other side, you know, you're playing in England and Australia, which is incredible countries, you know, probably more culturally closer to the way that we grew up in South Africa, you know, from a food and a lifestyle perspective. And incredible to experience those countries. But then, you know, the media and the crowds and the intensity of playing in those countries comes with a lot of pressure, you know, and, you know, got taught some massive lessons in particular in Australia on my first tour, you know, and realized that this is not about cricket anymore. 6 hours in front of an Australian crowd can really teach you some interesting lessons that you didn't realize about yourself. And then like Caribbean and, you know, just some incredible places that you go to and you experience. The game, I think the game, you know, it's tough. You're traveling 250, 260 days a year in your career and sometimes more. But just to play cricket around the world and to be exposed to that, to the camaraderie you build with, you know, players you played against. And, you know, like who would have thought that your dad and I would be besties, you know, after the battles we had on the cricket field, you know. And I think that's where the game has been incredible for a lot of
it. Totally. The friendships that are built, even though you're arch nemesis on the field, it's so funny how you're all so alike in that way of the minute you step onto the field, it's just this, you know, alter ego that comes out of the fighter. And then off the field, it's like, oh no, we all have so much in common and you're all quite similar in so many senses that you just leave all of that on-field dynamic on the field. And then when you're off, and especially when you finish, you just get to see these friendships blossom and you let it all go and just enjoy the good times.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, honestly, through my career, I would say New Zealand and Australia were the two teams in, on a consistent basis that we would have really massive kind of competitive battles, but would always have a beer afterwards. There'd always be kind of at the end of the series a really relaxed way of just sitting, enjoying each other's company. And it didn't always happen with every country that you played against, you know, but I would say New Zealand and Australia for us as South Africans was always the same. You know, it was always hard, it was tough, but we would always find time to sit and have a beer together. You know, I was there at the end of your dad's career. I was there at the end of sort of Panna's career. Two guys that I sort of battled against many, many times. So like, you know, those memories were always, those beers and those change rooms will always stay with me for a very long time. But, you know, we probably didn't have the same rapport with when we played against England a lot. I mean, their culture was slightly different, maybe more individualized. But New Zealand and Australia, for example, were like, you know, were very, very similar, similar ilk.
Okay, now everyone knows that when athletes eventually do retire, it's a completely different world that you're entering into. You know, you're on the greatest big stage, eyeballs watching you all the time. And that comes with so many challenges of going, okay, what is next? What am I going to do after this huge career, especially that you had, and finishing at just 33 years old? I mean, that's very young to be stepping out into the big wide world going, okay, cricket for me as a player stops here. How did you go? And obviously you've moved into now commentary and there's so much more that you're delving into now as a personality post-cricket. But that first, you know, first year or couple of years, how did you cope with the difference that, you know, your life was entering into?
Yeah, Gracie, I mean, my kind of start to retirement was a little bit tough. You know, my last series I played was, the first series I played was against Australia. My last series I played against was against Australia. And it was 2014. And in the second test match in Port Elizabeth, my daughter pulled like a hot water onto herself when we were still on the ground. So I finished the day's play and I got a message to say, you urgently need to get to the hospital. So for me, she had, you know, there were burn marks all over her face, her arm, her leg. So finished that test and flew to Cape Town. There was this next test starting in a day or two, whatever it was. And that whole test match that my last test match I ever played, every morning I was in like kind of surgery with my daughter waiting for her to come out. Then I would go to the ground. And I think mentally and emotionally, I hit the wall, and hence why I walked away from the game. I just think everything had hit me at that time. And then, you know, subsequently went through a divorce. So really it got to the point where, you know, I didn't want to be away from my children. So, you know, there was never going to be a comeback. So I'd made my decision and, you know, fortunately the plastic surgeons were incredible with my daughter. She's turned out, you know, perfect and amazing. So there's no real kind of, you know, scars or anything from that time. But, you know, for me then, you know, life kind of transitioned. And, you know, so needed to take some time to think and consider, like started getting a little bit into the media work, but I always enjoyed the kind of business side of sports. I think maybe getting into the captaincy at a young age, you're exposed to kind of different stuff than just maybe a normal player. And then so I wanted to transition into the business side. I think, you know, dabbled a little bit in administration, and then, you know, and with the media side, and then just like was a part of building SA20, which was an incredible thing. And we're now like 3.5, about to go into season 4, which I think it's been a real asset to South African cricket, and we've seen South African cricket go from strength to strength over the last 3 to 4 years. We've seen fans coming back to the game. So that's been a great, great thing to be a part of.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with Graham very soon. We're just going to take a break to have a word with our sponsors. We definitely have to mention SA20. I mean, we've seen a huge growth and huge viewership as well with this tournament. And there's so many players that just love going and enjoying the tournament itself. But, you know, seeing it go from the very conception to where it is now going into the fourth season, how proud are you of that growth of the tournament, especially in South African cricket?
Yeah, I mean, Gracie, I'm so proud. I mean, I think there were a couple of fundamentals that we had to get right. Like we had to, South African cricket was wobbling, you know, there was politics, there was administration issues, the team maybe, you know, was a bit despondent, had, you know, the talent, how was the talent going to come through? And, you know, the sort of platform for cricket in South Africa was sort of, you know, decreasing. So, you know, to build a something like SA20, but then to also be, you know, at the time, the 6 IPL franchises that decided to invest in South African cricket and, you know, sort of start their global kind of rollout was was lucky and fortunate that we were able to attract such quality, sort of team owners, franchise owners, some of the best in the world. And I think that whole ecosystem now is built together to kind of, with us and them, we've built South African cricket back up commercially. We've seen, you know, we've averaged close to 80% attendance throughout all our 34 games, which is incredible. We've seen new fans come to the game. And I think most importantly, we've seen new heroes come through. You know, if you look at the South African team now, winning the World Test Championship final, they made the final of the T20 World Cup. You know, there's some seriously talented players that have come to the fore. And I think for me, as an ex-player, that's like the number one highlight is to see the national team performing well. We've seen our ladies do well. Obviously, we obviously trying to find a way to see how we can start a women's SA20. But, you know, to see South African cricket back at a different level over the last 3 to 4 years has been what's made me most proud. And so, you know, that's hopefully that'll continue, Gracie. And we'll have to get you out. Try and get the big rig out for a bit of South African cricket again, get him surfing in Durban and so on, you know.
Double Haydos hitting South Africa. Oh my goodness. Double trouble, definitely. But yeah, just having the depth of talent now that the SA20 is providing, it would be so exciting for viewers at home and it would make everyone's so proud. I think that's what's great about Big Bash too. It's the exact same concept of scouting that next generation gun talent and depth of talent too for the country. So it just means so much, not just to the players and giving opportunity to youngsters, but also to have a nice viewership and fan base as well behind them.
Yeah, absolutely, Gracie. I mean, we also launched SA20 schools. We got 700 schools over 1,000 games that we do now every year. But, I mean, like last year, I think we had 17 players, 18 players that got picked up for the IPL, you know, and I think that now has become the largest international player base. You know, so if you think about it, there's only like 12 to 15 players that represent their country in a year and get that platform. We're now giving, you know, South Africans, 60, 70 South Africans, an opportunity, a platform on the global stage to be recognized and to perform in front of full houses, international production. So that, you know, the gap between international cricket and domestic cricket for us is closing because of the exposure. Players are getting opportunity. You know, if you look at Lwandle Pretorius and Kwena Mapaka, I mean, they started at SA20 when they're 17 and now playing for South Africa at 18, you know, playing in IPL. I mean, those type of stories I don't think would have happened if it wasn't for SA20. So, that, you know, playing our role in the cricket ecosystem and, you know, keeping South African cricket strong and, you know, people behind the game, I think has been awesome to be a part of.
Where do you see the league going in 5 years' time, say? What would be the growth projection you'd have?
Yeah, there's obviously some big decisions, you know, whether we extend the tournament, add new franchises that will come our way in a year or two. I think right now for us, it's just about, you know, making sure year on year we get better. You know, the quality of players is there. We've seen the South African players go from strength to strength. We've got outstanding international players coming as well. And then, you know, you just want to grow the fan base, and particularly in South Africa and globally. I think the world of cricket's going to, in my opinion, going to shift over the next coming years, Gracie. I think, you know, you'll see, you know, cricket from a bilateral perspective probably changed quite a lot. We've seen, you know, even the ICC are doing events every year. You know, I think you'll see kind of 4 to 5, you know, tier one franchise leagues and maybe Club World Cups coming, Champions League, whatever you want to name it. So I think that you'll see a progression of this space over the next coming years. And, you know, I think international cricket, in particular after the 27 World Cup in South Africa, there's a whole new FTP that needs to be negotiated, and I don't know how that's going to shift. So I think you will see a shift in kind of, you know, I'm excited for the Olympics. I think even though it's starting small, I think Brisbane, the next Olympics could be truly exciting for cricket. So yeah, I'm looking forward to kind of seeing how the landscape develops over the next few years.
Yeah, having cricket in the Olympics, who would have thought? Oh my goodness. I mean, and to have it here in Brisbane too. I'm biased being a Brizzy girl, but I'm very excited for that to happen.
Yeah, I'm going to be staying in your family home for that. I'm going to definitely, dad's going to teach me how to fish. It's good. You know, take me for, I mean, he's just crazy. I mean, he was sending me pictures of his bees the other day. I mean, like.
No, he's a real nature guy. He loves it. Honestly, we've got a whole farm here. We've got bees, we've got pigs, and then he'll take you over to, you know what? You're not going to be the only one that'll be camping at our house. I think we're going to have multiple swags set up around the place of just all the ex-players. It's going to just be like the friend get together at our home. And why not? You know what? When in Brisbane, come to ours. He'll be going into the cellar, like bringing out all the gun bottles. I'm absolutely definitely not.
Don't worry.
I'm going to be here.
I'm going to go and die 6 months before because I know your dad's going to feed us.
I'm going to need to because he'll feed you up really well. He'll make sure that you have nice alcohol in hand and it'll be great vibes, unreal stories. I think I might have to just hide the microphone. Microphones will be have to thrown away for all those conversations that we had.
Nah, I can't wait. I mean, those are the things that make these things special, you know. And I think for cricket, the 32 Olympics is going to be an incredible thing. It's the big platform for cricket going forward in the Olympics.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with Graham very soon to finish the episode with red light, green light to find out, does he wear sunglasses inside? I want to play a little game. I always get the guests to do this segment called Red Light, Green Light. So the whole concept is if you agree with the idea, you say green light. But if you don't agree, if you disagree, you go red light. You ready? Now, they're really random off-piece questions. So just go with me here, okay?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Declaring with your opener on 99 not out, red light, green light.
I was an opener, so I've got to say red light.
Okay, you got to say why. I forgot to mention that. You got to say why you've said red light or green light.
Well, I was an opening batter. I'd never declare on 99. You've done all the hard work for your team. You got to get the reward. Openers are the tough guys. They do all the hard work for the glory. For the glory setters at 4 and 5, you know.
You got to lift the bat, surely.
Have to. Have to face the new ball, do all the hard work, and just so your number 4 exactly. And 5 can come and get all the glory. No, you need that 100.
Not a chance. Get out of here, 4 and 5. Okay. Podcasting with a teammate is harder than playing with them.
Depends who the teammate is. I'm going to go general green light. I mean, it depends which teammate. I think you'd obviously have to know which one it is. But I would say green light. I think in most instances this would be good.
You wouldn't want a naughty one because then all the secrets would be exposed. So you just say red light to that one. But
no
all
secrets,
the team,
Grace,
you know.
There's no secrets for any of us.
Exactly. Okay. Next up, taking a review just to buy your bowl of time.
Is there like an amber light? Can you take it? Can you use an amber? It was,
sure. I'll create one.
I'm going red light. Yeah, I'm going red light. Okay. Bowlers, they get enough opportunities with the reviews.
Fair. Give it to them. All right. Marked up captains during live matches.
If I was captain, I'd probably say no. But now that I'm in building an event, I think I would say green light. I think now it's really great for the public to just get access to the way people talk and think. I would say green light.
Back in the day, you'd say red light, but now green light. Okay.
I mean, I think the world has changed. If you think about Warnie in the way back in the BBL when he was on mic talking about how he was going to bowl to Brendan McCullum, I mean, that's like gold TV that like still goes viral today. I just think the world commercially has just changed. If you look at American sports and so on, it is entertainment. Like a sport's always got to be tough and credible. But, you know, just giving fans a little bit more insight really just helps grow the sport.
And access too, right? I mean, we all personally give so much access to people, you know, online or on air. So why not do it in sport? Like, what a cool opportunity for youngsters to learn how some of the great minds of the game think during live play. But why not a little bit more access? Good TV.
Oh, absolutely. And now that we're building a product, like, you got to help it grow and you got to get people behind it. And, you know, I get from a player's perspective, you know, you can, you know, because it's so performance-based, you get a little bit insular, you get a bit scared. You know, you generally sometimes overprotect yourself and overthink these things as a player because of the pressure. So finding a balance there is always important.
Mm. Wearing sunglasses inside, red light, green light.
Absolute red light. What is wrong with your generation, Gracie?
I was hoping that was your answer, but you know what? You never know. You always have the little diva sometimes. I wasn't sure what you were going to be.
No.
It's a no-go.
I'm on dad scale in terms of personality rather than the diva.
He just gives it the old, what is that? What is that? Okay. Wearing Crocs when you're out and about.
I don't wear Crocs. I mean, my kids love them, but I can't get my, I mean,
definitely new generation.
I've also got size 13 feet, and a Croc doesn't look good on me. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm the most fashionable guy in the world, but I'd rather walk barefoot. I'd honestly rather walk barefoot than wear Crocs.
They would be some big crocodiles. Wow.
No, just a normal little thong, flop, small. Under the radar, that's me.
Okay. Last one. So you're replying to a partner's message. She's written you a really beautiful message, or she's, you know, just telling you what she's done today, and you just give her a little emoji. Red light, green light.
I'm going to say green light, but you know you're going to get into trouble for not responding in the right way.
What do you mean? You can't green light that. If that was my partner, he'd be in deep trouble replying with just emojis. I go, mate, he'd be getting just emojis for the next week. I'd be like, okay, fine, thumbs up for you until Monday to Friday.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to a man that doesn't I find, like, my phone in general quite tiring, so responding to 1,000 messages a day. But I do get it. My EQ is kicked in, and I realize that you have to make a bit more of an effort in that response.
You've got a daughter. Surely she wouldn't handle getting a thumbs up or a little just an emoji from dad. I mean, I'm flat out getting a phone call, and if I get a thumbs up, I'm like,
my daughter's just turned 13, Gracie. So she's not. She better not be getting long emotional messages on her phone.
I'm more saying from you. When I don't get a reply from dad, or he just gives me a thumbs up, I'm like,
God, are you joking? She's just turned 13. Like, she doesn't want to be near me currently.
True. That's true. She's in the little 13 diva phase. Love that from her.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It's honestly been such a pleasure to have you on here. Loved having a little chat, little laugh. I hopefully get to see you soon. I mean, I'm jealous that my family got to see you not at the same time that I did, but hopefully when you're here for the Olympics, we'll be tapping into dad's cellar. I'll be the first with the key in the door, and we could crack over some nice bottles to celebrate.
Oh, absolutely. But we'll see you before that. Hopefully come and join us. You and Dad, come and join us at SA21. Yeah, that'll be amazing.
Absolutely. Have us anytime. But thank you so much for joining us here on Game On with Grace. We've loved having you. Well, that's all for this episode of Game On with Grace. I want to thank Graham again for joining us. What an amazing figure in cricket he once was, but still is. So many incredible stories that we shared today. Lots of laughs, good times, of course. But if you loved this conversation, make sure you hit that follow button, subscribe, and tell your friends about this podcast, because there's so many more amazing episodes to come. We've got some great guests, hilarious chats, and big stories coming your way. So stay tuned. I'm Grace Hayden, and until next time, stay competitive.